This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of November 25th, 2018. Welcome. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this special edition about British Columbia government scandals, the Is It Just Me commentary, headlines from the Breaker.News, the Big Deal feature, a look at the November 20th bombshell suspension of the BC Legislature's clerk and sergeant-at-arms, and some of the biggest scandals from the 1990s to today, plus an interview with Freedom of Information expert Sean Holman about why the BC Legislature was a scandal waiting to happen. And I will award a virtual Nanaimo bar to those who deserve it. But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or is this a good time to remind you that if you're a British Columbian over age 18 and a Canadian citizen, that you should vote in the mail-in referendum on proportional representation? Elections BC extended the deadline from November 30th to December 7th because of the rotating Canada Post strikes. About 1 million voters have returned their ballots as of November 23rd, and that represents almost a third of those eligible. This is a chance for British Columbians to end first-past-the-post voting and to make their votes count in future general elections. It would end the BC Liberal and NDP duopoly and give the Green Party a chance to have more seats in the legislature, and for the BC Conservative Party a chance to get its voice heard inside the legislature. This edition of the Breaker.News podcast includes a reminder of why British Columbia deserves more choice. The pendulum swings from right to left, from business-friendly BC Liberals to labor-friendly BC NDP, and history keeps repeating itself. Waste and scandal get in the way of the good, efficient government that British Columbians deserve. We are also reminded again that the legislature is beyond the reach of the Freedom of Information Law because the politicians and their parties like it that way. The People's House is largely a mystery to the people that own it. What do you think? Email me, bob@thebreaker.news. Now it's time for a couple of stories you may have missed this week on thebreaker.news. First, two ex-NDP mandarins slapped with lobbying fines, according to reports released November 21st. The lobbyist who was once BC Premier John Horgan's right-hand man and the ex-chief of staff to Alberta Premier Rachel Notley was fined $1,000 for failing to report his past as a senior bureaucrat. Trevor Presley, an investigator with BC's Office of the Registrar of Lobbyists, found John Heaney had failed to disclose that he was a former NDP government insider when he registered on January 5th to lobby the BC NDP government on behalf of marijuana company Nuvera Corp. and the Canadian Generic Pharmaceutical Association. Heaney had been the Deputy Minister of Government Communications in the administration of Premier Ujjal Dosanjh in 2000 and 2001. After working as an assistant deputy minister in cabinet planning for less than a year. Heaney also held senior positions under Premier Mike Harcourt. Quote, I am troubled by the pattern displayed by the lobbyist of not declaring himself as a former public office holder, Presley wrote. However, when issuing this penalty, I can only consider the most recent contravention in the context of the British Columbia legislation. Therefore, I consider a penalty of $1,000 to be appropriate in this instance. The report said failure to disclose past work in government undermines transparency and the public's confidence in the registry. The law, Presley explained, is to address the public's concern that former public office holders can benefit from insider information and influence. Like Heaney, Greater Victoria Chamber of Commerce President Catherine Holt failed to report her past as a senior bureaucrat from the 1990s. Quote, it is highly unlikely she had undue influence over current public office holders. It is unlikely that she has any remaining insider knowledge, wrote investigator Tim Motz. There is no perception here that the in-house lobbyist moved freely between government and lobbying, enhancing her influence over the public service, end quote. Last December, Holt was appointed chair of the BC Transit Board of Directors by the Horgan cabinet. Holt is a former consultant to TransLink who was paid more than $266,000 when her ex-Sage Group business partner Doug Allen, another former BC government bureaucrat, was the TransLink CEO. Both Holt and Heaney claimed that they believed public office holder meant politician. And feds to study birth tourism, but petitioner wants details. Immigration Minister Ahmed Hussein responded November 19th to an electronic petition that was initiated by Richmond activist Kerry Starcheck and sponsored by Steveston Richmond East Liberal MP Joe Pescasolito. The government won't ban foreigners from coming to Canada to give birth and get instant citizenship for their babies, but the Trudeau Liberals are looking at enforcing existing immigration laws, such as foreign nationals are required to state the purpose of their visit to Canada. New statistics show that birth tourism is 5 times greater than previously estimated, about 1% of the 385,000 births in Canada from 2016 is due to foreign mothers. Richmond Hospital is ground zero for birth tourism in Canada, where 22% of births last year were from foreign mothers, mainly from China. Research by Andrew Griffith and Policy Options called on governments to stop ignoring birth tourism because of the effect on the integrity of citizenship and public perceptions that birth tourism is a fraudulent shortcut to obtaining citizenship. Richmond's Kerry Starcheck wants more details and deadlines about the government's next steps. She also wondered why the Public Safety Minister and the Border Security Minister was not part of the reply. Starchuk's petition, which was supported by 10,882 people, was brought to the House of Commons on October 5th by Pescasolito. It called upon the government to state it opposes birth tourism, to commit public resources to determine the full extent of the practice, and to implement concrete measures to reduce and eliminate the practice. Under federal law, MP-endorsed electronic petitions that gain 500 or more supporters within 4 months are tabled in the House of Commons. Those are some of the headlines from the Breaker.news. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.news podcast. November 20th, 2018, in the British Columbia Legislature, drama and history. Solicitor General and NDP Government House Leader Mike Farnworth rose at 11:06 a.m., to deliver a bombshell about the Clerk of the House and the Sergeant-at-Arms, and ask for a motion to suspend them both immediately and indefinitely.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, Government House Leader.
Thank you, Honorable Speaker. By leave, I move that Mr. Craig James, Clerk of the Legislative Assembly, and Mr. Gary Lenz, Sergeant-at-Arms, are placed on administrative leave with pay and benefits effective immediately. During the period of administrative leave, and as a consequence of an outstanding investigation, Mr. James and Mr. Lenz must not access Legislative Assembly network equipment, systems, or services, and must not be present within any building that is part of the legislative precinct, as defined in Section 1 of the Legislative Assembly Management Committee Act, RSBC 1996, C.258. This resolution is subject to periodic review and modification by the Legislative Assembly.
Honourable members, you heard the motion. All in favour say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Reporters caught up with Clerk Craig James as he was escorted from his office and the grounds of the legislature.
Do you have any idea what this is pertaining to?
No, I don't. And neither does the Sergeant at Arms.
It's completely baffling to everyone in the building.
Yeah, But I think we have a right to know what it is.
Confusion as Farnworth told The Breaker to contact the office of Attorney General David Eby. David Eby in turn told The Breaker to contact the clerk's office. Sage Aaron, a spokeswoman for Premier John Horgan, referred questions to the Speaker's office. Premier John Horgan was later asked at a press conference how this happened.
I was briefed by Mike Farnworth. He had been in consultation with the House leaders of the other two parties in the legislature, as well as officials in the Speaker's office. The first I heard about it was yesterday. It was shocking, to be sure. I am certainly very concerned that whatever investigation is underway is completed as quickly as possible for the individuals involved, but also for our institution.
Ellen Mullen, a special advisor to Speaker Darrell Plekis, confirmed that there was a police investigation.
I can confirm that there has been a special prosecutor assigned
I can confirm that there is an active and ongoing criminal investigation by the RCMP.
What kind of investigation is it?
It is an ongoing and active criminal investigation. It would be inappropriate at this time to say any more because we do not want to jeopardize any investigation that the RCMP have ongoing. As far as I know, it is absolutely unprecedented. And if I can be frank, I mean, it's disturbing. It's disruptive.
The RCMP also confirmed that they were investigating, but they refused to offer any details. Later in the day, the Public Prosecution Service said the RCMP asked on September 28th for a special prosecutor. On October 1st, two special prosecutors were appointed, lawyers David Butcher and Brock Martland. Ellen Mullins later said that an investigation began in January and was handed over to police in August. The National Post newspaper reported from unnamed sources that the RCMP was looking at allegations of fraud and theft. On November 22nd, Mike Farnworth confirmed what BC Liberal House Leader Mary Polak said about the November 19th 8 p.m. meeting with Speaker Plekis, that Plekis had proposed Mullen be named the acting sergeant-at-arms.
There was a discussion taking place on how and the positions which are on administrative leave would be filled. The suggestion was made, it was rejected. Everybody accepted it, and we moved on.
Reporters pounced on Daryl Plekis, who vowed to set the record straight about what went on.
Did you ask for Alan Mullen to become the sergeant-at-arms?
Well, I'm not sure you have the correct story.
So what's the correct story?
I'm not going to comment on that now.
Why not?
I'm sure you will find it interesting what I have to say this afternoon.
Will you be making the statement yourself?
I will be making a statement.
You'll make yourself available to us later?
Yes.
Speaker Plekis did not. Instead, Mullen announced that former BC Liberal Attorney General Wally Opel would join the Speaker's office as a second special advisor. Opel had been a Supreme Court judge before running for public office. Opel came to Plekis' defense when he told reporters in Victoria on November 23rd that the public needs to know that the Speaker has an academic background. He's a professor of criminology, and he is an honorable person who has acted on advice.
He's in a quasi-judicial role, and I know that he agreed to meet with the media and to give a statement, but he thought better of it. And I think that was a wise course of events. I don't think that the Speaker of the House in a quasi-judicial role should be required to give statements. But in any event, that's happened. And I think time will tell that the matter will resolve itself. But these things take time. There's a very complex criminal matter going on.
Then, word that James and Lenz had hired lawyer Mark Andrews of the Vancouver firm, Fasken. Andrews sent a letter to Farnworth, Polak, and Green Party House Leader Sonia Furstenow to say that his clients deny any wrongdoing, and he called into question the investigation by the Speaker's office. Andrews demanded the motion to suspend both Craig James and Gary Lenz be rescinded. Suffice to say, more to come. Read thebreaker.news for updates. British Columbia has a colorful history of scandals. In 1991, Social Credit Premier Bill Vanderzam stepped down over the sale of his fantasy garden world in Richmond. An investigation found he was in conflict of interest. He was later acquitted of criminal charges.
I must live by the guidelines which I initiated. In my view, there's only one appropriate course of action. I am prepared to resign now to ensure an orderly transition as quickly as possible.
In 1996, NDP Premier Mike Harcourt took the fall for the NDP's Nanaimo bingo scandal.
Taken its toll on me personally, politically, but most important on my family. And I want to return to that wonderful family and my personal life.
In 1999, NDP Premier Glenn Clark quit because of conflict of interest over the awarding of a casino license. Like Vanderzam, he was acquitted of criminal charges.
First of all, I just talked to Lieutenant Governor and tendered my resignation, effective when the caucus chooses a new leader. It's been nearly 6 months since the search of my house on the evening of March 2nd, 1999, and of course, I've known right from that date that it was likely I would be having to do this today or at some point.
The November 20th suspension of the clerk and the sergeant at arms of the BC legislature can be only compared to what happened almost 15 years ago, the BC Rail privatization scandal. On December 28, 2003, the police raided offices at the legislature and took away boxes and boxes of documents. Premier Gordon Campbell faced questions from reporters at his first news conference after the police raid.
The RCMP have been very clear that this has not involved any elected officials. It does not involve activities of government. Our interest, my interest, would be to have this information out as quickly as possible, as completely as possible.
Here is what CTV Vancouver Island reported in 2010 after a bribery trial of two former BC Liberal aides ended with a plea bargain.
Dave Bassey and Bobby Virk shocked everyone this morning with surprise guilty pleas in the BC Rail trial nearly 8 years after the equally shocking police raid on the legislature that led to charges against them. On December 28, 2003, police moved in on the offices of two ministers, seizing box after box of documents. A day later, they said this.
Those individuals are alleged to have been involved in an organized crime network that exchanged BC marijuana in the United States for cocaine.
But the charges Bassey and Virk pleaded guilty to had nothing to do with organized crime or drugs.
An expert who once worked in the BC Legislature press gallery as a journalist says he is not surprised because of the inherent secrecy at the legislature. Unlike government ministries and crown corporations, the legislature is excluded from the Freedom of Information law. It says so in Section 3. That is a major problem, says Sean Holman, professor of journalism at Mount Royal University in Calgary. He spoke to me via Skype. November 20th, 2018, a day of drama and history in the British Columbia legislature. Clerk Craig James and Sergeant-at-Arms Gary Lenz both were immediately and indefinitely suspended with pay. The RCMP is investigating. Two special prosecutors were secretly appointed on October 1st. The Speaker, Daryl Plekis, had concerns as far back as January, and the police were called in August. Sean, what is your reaction to this scandal?
I would say it's absolutely and completely not surprising. As you mentioned, Bob, the legislature itself is not covered by our Freedom of Information laws, and it behaves in a rather unaccountable way. The power of the speaker and his staff is pretty much absolute within the confines of the legislative precincts. So when you combine that kind of power with that kind of secrecy, the potential for abuse is pretty significant. The potential for wrongdoing is pretty significant. And we have to be careful here because we do not know what exactly these allegations are. But to me, again, it's not surprising.
Now, this is a case where the legislature is not covered by the Freedom of Information law. It has for a number of years provided information during public accounts, but within that, it only spawns more questions. I can bring to the table an example from last summer when the public accounts were released for the year ended March 31st, 2018. I sent it over an email to the clerks of the BC Legislative Assembly office, tested them a little bit. I knew that I wasn't going to get much of an answer. Just wanted to test them, especially under the new regime in Victoria with the NDP, and asked them about the public accounts. And on the first page of the Legislative Assembly financial report, supplier payments of $25,000 or greater for that fiscal year. There are 13 BC numbered companies and one Alberta numbered company. I asked if they could be so kind as to send me the names of the operators or directors of those numbered companies, or the names of the persons who invoiced for those numbered companies. And the answer I got from the clerk's office, they didn't sign their name on this email, just said kind regards afterwards, that the office of the clerk cannot provide the information you are requesting. You might be able to find the names of the directors by conducting a search at BC Registry, specifically the Registrar of Companies. So that's a case where they are spending money, they are spending taxpayers' money, and it's going, in some cases, to numbered companies, and they won't say who they're paying or what they're paying them for.
Yeah, and there is no way of getting that information other than the route that the office suggested, because, again, the legislature is not covered by our Freedom of Information laws. It ends up being the ultimate example of the father knows best approach to government. The government will only provide the information that it thinks the people have a right to know, not the information that the people have a right to know. I think that this situation at the legislature, and I'm talking now about the secrecy and the unaccountability, have been going on for a very, very long time. And the power of the speaker and the power of his staff in the legislature discourage reporters, discourage journalists, discourage, in other words, the representatives of the public from questioning those individuals. I still remember when I decided to question the Speaker of the Legislature, Bill Barisoff, about some of his activities, including a review that he was going to launch into the independent offices of the legislature. And when I tried to question him, I got called into his office. The head of the press gallery, Tom Fletcher, back then, got called into his office. And it was certainly made very clear to me with those actions that accountability was not something that was welcome at the legislature when it came to the operations of the speaker and the speaker's staff.
Now, this could take a long time for the facts to come to light, for the facts to be tested in court, for there to be any criminal prosecution. There may not be a criminal prosecution in the day. We just don't know. Mm-hmm. But this could be a moment where this 19th century approach to government inside the legislature, which is different from how the government is governed by the FOI law, this could be a moment where this 19th century approach could be reformed and brought up to date.
Potentially, if enough people start asking questions about why the legislature isn't covered by freedom of information laws, and if enough noise is raised about that particular issue. It's funny. Freedom of information laws are important because they improve the democratic manners of public officials. If public officials know that they are being watched or have the potential to be watched by the public and their representatives in the form of activists and reporters, then the potential for wrongdoing decreases. That's one of the reasons why we have freedom of information laws, not just in this country, not just in British Columbia, not just in the other provinces, but worldwide. It allows a degree of control on the part of the public in terms of the decisions that their public officials are making. It allows us to hold them to account. Information is the beginning of accountability, and if you don't have information, you can't have accountability.
That was my interview with Sean Holman, professor of journalism at Mount Royal University in Calgary. He is a former member of the BC Press Gallery, where he published publiceyeonline.com. Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to people who make a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to all of those out there who are donating money, time, and energy to those in need as Christmas approaches. Whether it's cans of food for the food bank or a toy for the Christmas Bureau, Christmas is on the way, and this should be the time of year to think about giving, not receiving. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send us an email to bob@thebreaker.news. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of November 25th, 2018. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on November 25th in 2003, 15 years ago, the BC Rail privatization was announced. The BC Liberal government under Premier Gordon Campbell called it the BC Rail Investment Partnership. When they won the election in 2001, Campbell promised to not privatize BC Rail. On December 28, 2003, police raided offices at the BC legislature, and it soon became apparent that the billion-dollar sale to CN Rail was tainted. Ministerial aides Bob Virk and Dave Bazzi were charged, and they claimed their innocence until October 2010, when they pleaded guilty to bribery in exchange for taxpayers picking up their $6 million of legal bills, which was against government policy. Documents were later leaked that pointed to meddling by politicians, including Christy Clark. In 2013, the NDP ran on a promise for a BC Rail public inquiry, but they lost the election to Clark and the BC Liberals. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to Bob at thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.